Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebrov.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
Ukrainian clubs and our players abroad are into the final month of their club campaigns. Titles, medals, Europe, survival hang in the balance across the continent. Shakhtar and Dinamo are going toe-to-toe for gold. Dovbyk chasing down the golden boot in Spain. Zinchenko's Arsenal desperate for that Premier League title. You guys know what's coming. We'll be dissecting all the endgame goings-on in the UPL. Pesha and Drewa, sprinkled with a look across the continent too.
And before we kick things off, a few words from the podcast's new sponsor, WatchUPL.com, the only official place to watch the majority of UPL and Ukrainian Cup games in the UK, USA and Canada. The Klasichna is coming up next week, the week after the Ukrainian Cup final between Shakhtar and Vorskla. 6 out of 8 games will be broadcast on WatchUPL.com this weekend too. Stream games from any phone or computer, utilise the live chat to discuss big moments with other fans during games, and if you can't catch the matches live, then you have access to HD replays anytime, on demand. Show your support for Ukrainian football and the UPL by tuning in to watch the remaining matches the second half of the season, with the exception of Dinamo Dnipro 1 and Zorya home games. There's no better place to watch Shakhtar versus Chornomorets and the relegation crunch tie between Veres and Minai this weekend, as well as the aforementioned Classico between Shakhtar and Dinamo next weekend and the Ukrainian Cup final on WatchUPL.com. Use our discount code 20ZL to get 20% off any of the match passes. And without further ado, welcome to another episode of Ukraine Plus Football.
Роман Зозуля, в якого вірив Михайло Фоменко, ставив в основі завжди, і він його не підводить, він забуває.
And as we open up this episode this week, I think it's worth commemorating the passing of a Ukrainian footballing legend, both as a player and as a manager. At the start of this week, everyone found out that Mikhailo Fomenko, the ex-Ukraine manager, ex-Dynamo Kyiv player, has passed away at the age of 75. Obviously, an icon for many people who have grown up over the past two decades of Ukrainian football, especially national team. The 2010s, I guess, were dominated by him, per se, in the respect that he took over at the end of 2012 when Oleg Blokhin left for Dynamo Kyiv. Then there was the interims. Then Fomenko came in, saved Ukraine from quite a dismal start in World Cup qualifying for Brazil, got them to the playoffs, did that 2-0 win against France that everyone remembers at the Olympijski, but sadly it wasn't meant to be the World Cup. And then in the Euro qualifying group, got Ukraine through the playoffs for the first time ever in their history, and was the first manager that got Ukraine to the Euros outright, because obviously previously the Euro 2012 was automatic. He will be fondly remembered for everything, for sure. And as a player, won the UEFA Super Cup, won the UEFA Cup Winners' Cup in 1975, and had a very illustrious managerial career that took him everywhere. Georgia, he was the national team manager of Guinea, won the UPL, per se, the Ukrainian top league in 1993 and the Ukrainian Cup that year, was Metalist manager 3 times. I think one of the most memorable Metalist managers after Miron Markevich. May he rest in peace.
Just to add up, he is the author of a legendary phrase that could describe the Ukrainian managerial school as it is. We're not in casino. when asked about playing two forwards in one of the important playoff matches. Yeah, like it, back in the day, it was Kravets and Selezniov. And he said, we're not in Casino. I'm going to play one. And also, he is the legendary Tavria manager. He managed it when Tavria was ruled by Crimean criminals. And he never backed off. He produced some great results. And he was, I believe he was the one who led them to their European glory. Short-lived, though, because they played in Intertoto Cup. But he has achieved some top 10 places with the Crimean team. And he's, I think that's his top three jobs in his career, Metalist, Tavria, and Ukrainian national team. So yeah, rest in peace.
Where else now to start with this episode? But the title race. After all of the novel narratives of the autumn period, it's back to the classic two, the giants of Ukrainian football, Shakhtar Dynamo, battling it out for the title. Andrew, over the last couple of weeks, both of them have surged back to the top of the UPL as Galicia, Krivbas and the like have started to fall on the way. What is it for you that has seen them rise to the top as we've come to the important business end of the season?
Well, simply put, it's Shakhtar winning 13 games in a row, potentially 14 by the time people are listening to this. They've not been particularly amazing in a lot of those matches, but they grind out the results and get the wins. Some people say, oh, it might be some controversial refereeing decisions, might be to do with motivation of opposition players and all that kind of thing. But the reality of the situation is that Shakhtar have got the best in-depth squad in the UPL. They can start these sort of half-strength teams that may not get the most out of themselves against some of these lower teams. However, then Pušić switches it up, throws on a few of the Brazilians and others, you know, such as Marian Shred, who stepped up recently, Daniel Sakanafi's on the bench, etc. And they end up getting the win.
And maybe in halftime, dressing room talk, there is Mario Stanić involved as well.
And that's how it's been, really, for most of this calendar year since the return from the winter break. And that rotation has, you know, helped out a lot. You've got Daniel Sakanafi's on 9 goals, could be on more, loves being inside the box. I think 8 of those 9 goals have come inside the area, majority of them inside 6 yards as well. He's had a really good season at the end of the day. And it just seems whenever you watch Shakhtar, even if they go behind or something, they'll probably be coming back and they'll probably win this. And as we know, they are desperate to win the UPL because of the implications that it will have for their next season. If Shakhtar win the UPL, they will be in the UCL group stages automatically, only if Borussia Dortmund don't win the Champions League. There's a bit of nuance and all that kind of stuff, but we'll discuss that a bit further detail if it comes to it over the next few weeks. On top of that, you've got Lucina Traore, who Pušić likes to switch up with Daniel Sakan from time to time. He might not be as prolific in terms of goals this season. I think he's got 2 of late, you know, in this recent 2024 run. But he's got 6 assists, and that's like coming off the bench. He loves linking up play, big, bulky player that he is. And that obviously helps out things. On top of that, the new signings that they've made, bloody hell. Kevin, I think he's got 3 or 4 assists for Danilo Sakan in recent matches. They're making quite a good tandem. And Marlon Gomez, who costs 12 million plus 4 million bonus add-ons, got his first start the other day after plenty of sub-appearances against Chrono Moritz. Got a first-half hat-trick, didn't he, with a lovely finish for the third. You know, even had Sudakov gobsmacked. But I guess they're in good hands for some of those players that might be on their way next season. And I'm sure they've probably got a hefty transfer list coming up in the summer as well, given the fact that Sudakov is expected to leave. Dario Sonar, I think, but was speaking to KDK last week, said that they want 60 million euros for him. So we know in Shakhtar, lay out a price. That's usually what they get. And there's also the question recently of Mareno Pušić and his future. So apparently Arne Slot, who's going to Liverpool in the summer, he approached Pušić and asked him to be his assistant. Pušić rejected that, according to the Tribuna, and also I think Adam Crafton from The Athletic. However, there's more talk now in Netherlands in particular of Pušić to take over the actual vacant final job. So let's see how that goes on going forward as well, because I mean, Feyenoord, I think, are going to be in the Champions League too, currently second in the Eredivisie. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Shakhtar are just a juggernaut in this league, in the reality of all things. Only Dinamo can really compete with them. And I guess the Klasichne will probably be the decider. So it's all looking finely poised. And I hope that obviously this weekend coming, both, well, anything can happen, but that will be even more even, just because I think that having that Klasichne as like a title final will be quite, you know, fun for the neutral or anyone else, that it can be won like that. Because, you know, if there is a bit too much in it, Shakhtar can play for the draw, carrying on, you know, with a 4-point break into the final two games, and it might be beyond. Dinamo will have to go for it with the jugular. And I mean, they've not been too bad either of late. They are still unbeaten under Alexander Shrubkovsky, who arrived at the end of October. Can you believe that? I don't think anyone realistically believed that. Obviously, a few bad results in the fact that they got draws against LNZ and Veres since the resumption of the winter break. But overall, they get the job done. And that's something that under Lucescu, you know, Dinamo just looked lethargic. They looked like they didn't care anymore, or like they just had no faith in playing under Lucescu, who ironically did pay a visit to Conchas Aspas last week. I don't know what tips he gave, but hopefully it was nothing to do with tactics or football, because obviously that's not been of any positive impact over the past sort of season and a half. At the moment, it looks like Dinamo and Shakhtar are finishing top two regardless, unless there's some sort of crazy shift between Krivbas and Dinamo. And both of them will be going into, obviously, the Champions League group stages if Shakhtar win, or the qualifiers if Dinamo win. So it's finely poised, let's say that.
Certainly going to be grabbing everybody and keeping us glued to our screens over the next few weeks. Now, Ray, is there any truth in the story that Vernidub actually invited Lucescu to visit the Conchas Aspas training base this week in an attempt to upset the Dinamo juggernaut, pulling ahead in second place and giving perhaps Krivbas an outside chance of grabbing that UCL spot?
Well, Adam, you just provoked me to remind everybody that UPL is not about winning. It's not about getting up the table. It's not about reaching higher places. And that's what Krivbas and the likes of this club are all about. And I'm not sure about Vernidub doing such things, but I'm pretty sure that he's happy where they are now. They're third. They're unreachable for anyone. And it's as good a result as any. Because, well, I said it before, I think that in terms of Vernidub, he's like Simeone for the rest of Ukrainian coaches, because he finally had the finances. Well, again, because he did it in Zorya with this pretty much the same opportunities. He had decent players apart from the top two of our league. Because remember, Kabayev and Antuk went to Dinamo and they did not really impress until recently or at all. So it's about having enough modest opportunities, decent opportunities, having finances, having being backed up by the state, because, I mean, it's Krivbas, right? And, of course, it's also about principles, because if we take Vishniak and Kolos, if we take Koval and Zorya, if we take Skripnik is only working in Metalist because he works in Germany, just because he has this line in his CV, because he spent like 15 years in Werder, like as a second coach or whatnot. And that's just what you're happy with. Yeah, you reach that level, and that level is good enough for you to go back home and become a coach of a team that's fighting for relegation. You don't have to do anything. And you don't have principles, of course, because Skripnik, he didn't let Zorya get the silverware in 2020 again in the match against Desna. We'll always remember that. And that is his karmic role in his life. And that's how it is. Same with Vishniak and a bunch of other guys in the league. Shishenko in Polisia. You invite former players. You don't pay much, and you're happy with. But all these guys, they look up to Vernidou because Vernidou made it amongst the equals, let's say, right? Because as we say, top two is unreachable in UPL. And I mean, even if you are Vernidou, you're not good enough to become one of the top two. There, I don't see anybody who might be able to do that. Because again, you have to stop following Vernidou and you have to be a real outcast. Like Ruslan Rotin. He works in Alexandria. He has the structura. He coached a lot of teams at the same time. And he is seen as a prophet of Ukrainian coaching school. I don't know. But again, he is struggling because his structura got beaten a couple of times. And badly. And that's what you have to face in top flight of Ukrainian football. We can talk about the lower leagues if we have time, but that's what is happening right now in the Premier League.
Where does, in your opinion, this Vernidou team rank in his legacy? Is it one of his quintessential teams or not?
I would agree with you. I think Andrew can back me up in it because, again, that is decent players. That is finances, and that is his philosophy, which is Brzeki, which is the brutal men and fighters. And people say that he's playing good football in terms of like it's pacey, it's vertical. It's still not good enough for me to make me put on the match of Crew Bus on a random Sunday, you know, 3 a.m. in Mexico, because it's like that time difference. It's always like this. I'm not going to do that because I know that it's Vernidou, and I know that we have hundreds of Vernidous in the league. But yes, it is his quintessential team, of course. And the question is, if we talk about the legacy, well, I just explained it to you, right? But is it going to be changed? Is it going to be like finally somebody would make it into top two without Brazilians, without Argentinians, like Metalists with Markevich did, or like Dnipro did when they got, I believe they also got the second spot at some point and they made it into Champions League where they lost, of course, and Markevich was their coach. But still, well, that loss made it possible for them to win the Europa League, but that's another story. It has to be different. Of course, we can say that, oh, it's hard times. You know, it's war and football is not a priority at all. But why not?
There's something about Dynamo and Shakhtar that is, you know, like a slight level above. And it's obviously not to do with the fact that, like, Shovkovsky or anything, but just the quality in the squads. You can even say maybe some of the big game decisions will end up going the ways of those two teams above some of the others. The fact that, you know, Crvena Zvezda have been dropping points in silly games as well. Okay, yeah, they lost to Shakhtar, which is, I mean, fair enough and understandable. Yeah, there was that thing where Kryskiv took a quick free kick and everyone was sort of faffing around and people saying it was against the sporting principles and everything like that. But realistically, the points where they've not been able to finish in the top two is from drawing with the likes of Vorskla, Ruch, who are kind of similar to their level. But this season, Kribas have just been the best out of that lot. Looking at the points, though, it is still impressive, the amount of points that they have amassed. Let's not lie. They are closer to Shakhtar and Dynamo than they are to anyone else, you know, in the league. And they've got Dnipro 1 this weekend. And if they fail to lose, so as long as they draw or win, they will be confirmed third. And I mean, I think that's like really impressive. Based on actually the squad that they've got, I agree. It's similar to the Zorya teams that Werner Dubb had in the past. It's even similar to, you know, sort of the Sheriff team that he had when he was in the Champions League with them. Some very shrewd scouting by the club to go sort of for lesser-known African players like Dibango, Prince Adu when he was playing a bit, but then he got injured and then, you know, he's not been playing recently, but he was effective when he did at the start of this post-winter break period. Daniel Sosa's been not too bad this campaign. And it's just like, why haven't other teams below them been as successful in that kind of scouting and recruitment position? For example, LNZ, they brought in, you know, like half a team or a brand new team of foreign players, and they've been nowhere near as effective impact-wise as these guys have. And obviously that's a lot to do with the coaching, which we have to commend to Werner Dubb. Like you say, the Simeone, maybe the bridesmaid, but never the bride, other than the fact that Simeone has won La Liga once. So maybe it is coming at some stage for Werner Dubb in the future.
Sorry to interrupt you, Andrew. I have to explain myself about Simeone, because back in 2015, 2016, when Rebrov was commanding the league with his Spanish coaches, the likes of coaches from mid-table teams like Babic, and who did we have back then? Maybe even Werner Dubb himself. I mean, I'm sure about Babic. He said that he's following Simeone. That's his icing on the cake in terms of footballing master. So that was their idol, and that's why I refer to him.
Other than these players that they've got from Africa, and a lot of them have been from like other European teams. So, you know, they've scouted them, brought them in. And honestly, it's top scouting, to be honest, because they've been really good. And I think that if they end up selling them this summer or next in the winter, as it usually is the case, they'll probably get a profit on them. They're doing well, and fair play to them. And then on top of those foreign players that they've got, for me, what's really good about Werner Dubb is that he somehow made very average looking Ukrainian players that probably would get nowhere near, or you know, that would be playing for somewhere in the bottom half of the table, realistically, you know, on paper at the very least. He's been getting this out of them, like, you know, extra ability and consistency, which I think is the main thing. They've been consistent throughout the whole season. With, you know, Maxim Lyonov has been doing next to nothing really for Zorya for a number of years. Comes to Kribas, and he scored 3 in his last 5. And the same with, you know, Homchanovsky still going about. He's playing regularly, influential at the age of 34. And plenty of other players in there. Kozhushko in particular is the one that caught me by surprise, because he's been obviously one of their top goal scorers this season. 8 goals. And I remember him like 3 or 4 years ago, I randomly saw him after like a Kolos game when they were playing at Obolon Arena. It might not have been against Obolon. It might have been against like Zorya or someone like that. And he was just like in Pusatahata in Obolon metro station after the game, just eating some food. And he was like an unused sub or something. And it was just like, who is this guy? You know, obviously he must just be some bit part player. And look at him now. He's like one of the most improved players this campaign. And I mean, obviously, there's no uncertain term down to Werner Dubb, who obviously last season, they had a bit of a shaky one. It was like a mid-table all in all. But he's had that time, instilled it. I would be excited. And I think that they will get through their European qualifying cycle, either into the Europa League, which would be absolutely unbelievable if they made it through there, if they finished third, or into the Europa Conference League group stages, which I think they wouldn't even put a bad showing, nowhere near as bad as, you know, Dinamo have and Zorya in particular have shown us. You know, they'll be playing that typical play for a 1-0, and they'll probably not do too bad about that. And just finishing up, Kribas have actually been already looking at venues for their European ties. So I think over the past week, a few of their representatives went to Germany and looked at 4 different venues. So they went to Dresden, Cologne, Gelsenkirchen, and Berlin at the Olympiastadion. I think that's a bit ambitious, in all honesty. Obviously, they're picking stadia that probably won't be seeing European football anyway, so they'll be trying to attract that. Realistically, I think they'll probably go for the Dresden or Cologne, because I think that's like 25 to 30,000. Heard some things about Dresden from some people, followers. They said that it's quite pro-Russian area of Germany, which is, you know, because I think it's East Germany, probably a lot of Russian people that live there still, which is a shame. But still, you'd hope that with the way that Kiribati are actually very good at marketing, they'll somehow be able to attract the Germans to come out to support them at the very least.
I'm not sure if Germans to watch Kvartal.
Well, maybe they don't, but at the very minimum, I think they would be able to attract more fans to the ground than Zorya did last year, where I think some attendances were like 800, and that's in a 10,000 seat stadium in Lublin. So, you know, fingers crossed. And that's only if they make the group stage, by the way. I think if they, for the qualifying campaign, regardless if they're in the Europa or the Conference League, it's going to be somewhere in Moldova, which is just going to be quicker transit for the team to get in and out of. But even still, I think Kiribati have very much been the revelation of this season. I think there's no uncertain terms about that.
I got to agree with you there, Andrew. But you mentioned that the Venage have succeeded in getting out everything possible he could from the average players like Kosciuszko and kind, and that is his power. It doesn't mean that they play better football. It doesn't mean they become smarter tactically or they become smarter strategically. They can make it in Europe straight away right after this. So it's not a guarantee. If you make it, like, European scouts are watching the table and they see Kiribati is third. They check the players, they watch their games, and they see, okay, that's cool, but it's only because Vernidov was there. If you take the player from this team, he's going to be an average hit-and-run guy, elbows, shoulders, dive dog, like Mykolenko. But of course, Mykolenko really improved from Dynamo's years and stuff. But basically, that's the concept. Do Europeans need it? I'm not sure. Europeans know how to play football. Maybe they're getting worse at it because they have less money. But it's difficult, different model of football. And that's what we're going to see with Kiribati's team in Europe. But so far, as I said, in terms of legacy, this is the pinnacle of this team. And Vernidub and the coaches of his generation, it's like an old FIFA career mode. The psychological weakness doesn't let them win big.
Well, they have been the standout team of the year for me as well. And based where I am, I'm hoping they go for Cologne. I think it'd be anywhere in the sort of the Westphalia region there in Western Germany would be a great shout, and certainly would get a number of people into the stadium. Now, elsewhere in the league, there's been a number of interesting stories to get our team into briefly. Kolos changed their manager for the best. Who knows? Andrew, you've commented a lot this week on their good defensive record. It's a shame their attacking lineup hasn't quite come to the same standard this season. I'm not that optimistic if the change in management will see much of an upturn in fortune in the short term. How about you?
I agree. Listen, just want to sum that up again. Kolos have the best defensive record in the league this year. 19 goals conceded in 25 games. No one else can boast that. However, obviously the issue with Vishniak and the fact that he has left his role as manager was the fact that they've only scored 18 goals in reply to those 19 goals conceded in those 25 games. So, yeah, goals have been hard to come by. There have been a lot of 0-0 draws this season. I think I counted around 6 or 7.
They'd have to be.
And they actually made some very good summer signings last year. I was quite impressed with them, with the likes of like Turikov getting involved, Burda, of course, helping solidify defence. Totovitsky returning from Shakhtar. This winter, they brought in that Paulaskas, who had a good debut and then hasn't really done anything since. Topalov arrived. Bezborodko's still scoring on occasion for them, you know, in those random blue moon wins that they get against the likes of Vorskla, who are similarly one of the most inconsistent teams ever. That's the kind of thing that we've been seeing from Kolos this season. Bulldog attitude at the back and sort of toothless, no bark up top. But, I mean, we have to admit that there have been issues with injuries to a lot of their players in attack anyway, and in particular, Totovitsky, who, just like he was at Desna, he's like the main creative outlet for anything. And when he did play, he was like getting two or three assists per game, scoring goals, you know, being super creative. But other people in the team have sadly let the side down. Like Surikov, who I think can be more influential attacking. I know he's a fullback, but he can be more influential attacking. Hasn't really stepped up to the plate this season. Luchkevich, who back in the day was really good, he's not contributing enough. Rangel, who wasn't too bad for Vorskla when he played there, but he's not really been the same for Kolos. And Dmytro Topalov finally getting a start where he can actually play as an attacker, and he's not really cutting it. Vishnyak has left his role or been relieved of his role, and he has now become the club's vice president, or one of them. As a result of that, Kolos have replaced Vishnyak for the remainder of the season, caretaker manager, by the under-19s manager, Oleksandr Pozdeyev. And I think this week, at the start of this week, another vice president of the club, Volodymyr Henninson, ex-UPL chief, etc., he said that they are looking through all possible candidates for the permanent job, obviously, in the summer. And they won't rule out vacancies of managers that have recently left, the likes of Man United and Liverpool and other that kind of joke. But anyway, that is what we're kind of dealing with here. Kribasa saw the Kolos are the quintessential.
Oh, that was Freud. That was Freud.
Kolos are very much the epitome of mid-table. They're not bad enough to get relegated, but they're just not good enough to get anywhere. They can't reach those heydays of the Kostisian era where there was such a gulf in class between Dinamo and Shakhtar and everyone else that they were able to sort of break into that top four even. Nowadays, that's not realistic. Ninth, where they're currently at, 10th, that is their spot, per se. I mean, I think they'll just probably cruise into that towards the end of the season as well.
It's quite sad what has happened to Kolos over the last couple of years. I do miss those memorable nights in Europe. One day we hope to see them back there. Another team that's going to be looking back on their European heydays is Zorya, who are looking without European football for the first time in 10 years. And no doubt question marks will be raised this summer about their long-term viability within the league. And me, for one, hope they do manage to bug along through these difficult times and better times around the corner and jump straight into the battle for fourth place. Rook, or the team that represents the great city of Dnipro. One of those two will take the guaranteed Conference League spot, with the other one waiting on the outcome of the Ukrainian Cup final in a couple of weeks to see if the fifth spot becomes available. I, for one, would like to see Rook take it. I think it is well merited over there. What can be sometimes controversial investments that go on into the club. But I do believe they do a lot for youth football in Ukraine, and we're already starting to see the fruits of their labour coming through and creating the team that has performed a lot better than they have done over the previous few years. And something good is starting to sparkle within Lviv there.
Just want to jump in there, Adam, and say that this fourth place run-in could well be impacted quite significantly on Monday when Krivbas face off against Dnipro 1, because it's come out recently that if Dnipro 1 don't win, Yuri Maksimov will depart his role as head coach due to reasons at the moment that he's not satisfied with things within the club. However, he said that only after he leaves will he be able to elaborate. So, as we mentioned earlier, Krivbas, they're going to be chasing down, confirming third if they win or draw. And if either of those come to fruition, then Yuri Maksimov will be off. And the final three games that Dnipro 1 will have in the Premier League, which include Alexandria, Shakhtar, which could be big in the title running, and Chornomorets, will end up potentially putting everything into the favour of Rukh to get involved there.
Ray, are you with me there? Rukh over the other lot?
Rukh over anybody, yeah, to be honest. It's a good structured team. They made some fuss in the UEFA Youth League. That's how they got their coach these days. Ponomarev, he was the youth coach before. Not the kind of youth coach as you might have in Kolos, to be fair. So, yeah, we can see that Rukh is kind of like a model for a, not healthy, because they still have their owner, but eccentric, an eccentric one, who monopolized, we could say, UPL Teber, the whole region of Lviv, that is now, right now, a mecca for Ukrainian football. But, I mean, you got to take your opportunities, right? You got to take hold of them and don't let them go. And that's exactly what they did. So, yeah, a positive example. As opposed to Kolos, again, because remember the formula for Kolos, Zorya, that you also mentioned, without European football in the first time in 10 years. The formula is happy owner, little money, shit coach, classic players. And foreigners don't play as extra because nobody bothers talking to them. That's the formula. And Rukh only has happy owner, and that's it. The foreigners are happy. They have money. They have decent coach, and they have youth. That's how we roll in Lviv Oblast.
It's like a catch line for the club, isn't it? Or cigarettes, they do pay. Now, at the bottom end of the table, there's a lot more intrigue as we come into the closing stages of the season. As my dear friend Vladimir Zverov would always say, no matter what happens in a UPL season, Minai find a way to survive. And we're starting to see signs of that coming true once again, as an upturn in their performances. However, on the other side of the coin, Andrew, Metalist 1925, they're looking in some serious trouble over there. I know you've had a good look at them. Where's it going so badly wrong? The Kharkiv side.
Weird, really, because they're not that bad in terms of, you know, the football they play. They try and play the classic diamond formation that Skripnik is known for. Ray, obviously, not a big fan of Skripnik, of course.
What kind of classic lineup? Bremen lineup? Werder Bremen? Come on.
But the thing about Metalist 1925 is that they've not won a game since the winter break's returned. 5 losses, 4 draws, 4 points out of 9 games is not going to get you anywhere. And then you look at their fixtures that are coming up for the remainder of the season. They've got Vorskla, Chornomorets, Polisia, who might be chasing something come the penultimate weekend of the season, and then Veres as well, which is going to be basically like a relegation 6-pointer, shootout, playoffy, whatever. I mean, genuinely, they're in big trouble. And I can't really pinpoint why they can't win games or get through certain results, because most of the time, they're actually going behind in games. And then they end up equalising. That was like how it was against Obolon. That's how, like, even against Kolos and all these other teams. You know, it perplexes belief. And I'm obviously, at some stage, surely they're going to get a win. That's just how football is. You know, wins end up coming most random places. But at the moment, it seems like you don't know where that win's going to come from, because, you know, they've lost to all their near rivals at the moment, or drawn with them. You know, Oberlin, Menai, they lost to them. Zorya, losing to them. Got Veres coming up. I mean, in general, it's not looking particularly great. And there was a recent interview with the owner, or a big video that Dmytropol Vorozniuk, Mr. Trendets, did with the president of Metalist 925, who obviously is the owner of a white bit big sort of cryptocurrency platform. It was like, what happens if you are going to be relegated or something like that? He was like, well, we're not sort of thinking about that yet. We'll go to church. It was all kind of like slightly lighthearted that it possibly might not happen. And I guess that video was filmed during the international break, I think, at the end of March. So obviously we've come through a whole other month and it's not improved. Honestly, I would be surprised if Skripnik remains, if they get relegated, in all honesty. Whether Skripnik will want to stay there, for one, surely there must be something, you know, if they're going to be in Pierwsza Liga and they're going to have to win it, there's got to be some sort of other game plan going on, especially with the likes of Bukovina, who are going to be challenging them, you know, for the top spot that everyone's expecting, and whoever else joins them down there. You know, if Minai, God forbid, somehow get relegated, they've actually not been doing too bad under Ljubljanovic. And I mean, if they keep a lot of the players that they've ended up signing, they've signed like 10 players or whatever in the last window, and a lot of those players, I could see that Minai team doing very well in Petra. In all honesty, obviously a lot more professionally set up than the majority of the teams down there. And like, I wouldn't rule out a back-to-back sort of relegation and promotion. However, Minai, like we mentioned, they're obviously not actually having the worst of times of late. Beat Rodna Moritz randomly, drawing with Ruch, drawing with Oberlin, of course, near rivals. I mean, it might be too much to ask for them to stay up, in all honesty. They've got Veres to come. They've got Kolos, who might be, that might be a dead rubber per se, but screams of 0-0 or 1-1, that result. Got Vorskla just before the cup, which could have an influence on things, on how, you know, teams resting up and everything going on. And then on the final day, they'll be against Krivbas. And if Krivbas have nothing to play for, you never know. But right now, it looks like the main thing that everyone out of that bottom four, as Ray mentioned, alluded to earlier, that Skripnik said, we've got our own group down here. That bottom four, realistically, they're probably all going to remain in that bottom four. Now it's who can get into those playoff spots and ideally probably avoid Levi Berg, if, in all honesty, if they wanted to, who are probably going to finish third, and then try and finish off whoever's going to be fourth in Petra, that we're going to be talking about slightly later on. It's going to be intriguing, and probably more intriguing than the title race in about 2 weeks' time. So fingers crossed it all sort of plays out and there is some excitement going in to the end of May for us all, including for Ray, of course, with Oberlin, who somehow could potentially still get out of there. But unfortunately, with obviously Ruslan Rotany above him, with Rotany-style football, it's probably going to be unlikely, because he'll pull something out of the bag there. You know, just unlimited draws coming through.
Just great that you can stand up, because the way you went down here was horrid. Look at that.
Now, across Europe, it's been a mixed bag, as always, for our boys. Where no matter which league we look at, there is a story popping out for us to dissect, whether it's Spain or the EPL. And in the EPL, of course, over the last week, Everton have been at the forefront of all Ukrainian Zabina fans in particular, with the concerning news about Mykolenko. It looked quite an innocuous incident, first of all, and Mykolenko went over in the challenge, I know you can provide us with a bit more detail, but he came back on, continued to half time before being replaced. And now it appears at present time, he's going to be out for a minimum of 6 weeks. Now, this is concerning not only for the player himself, who has found, as Ray said, a whole new level of form this season within the Everton team, but also for Zabina heading into Euros, and raise a whole new discussion for us about who would take on the spot if he is missing from the tournament, which we all hope is a conversation that won't need to be acted on. However, we still need to have that discussion now. Andrew, what would be plan B if you were Serhii Rebrov?
Yeah, it did look pretty bad. A little snap of the ankle when it bends over. But like we mentioned, McColl continued for another 10 minutes until the halftime whistle went. And luckily, this week it's been confirmed that he will not need surgery. There was worries from Vatskoa earlier in the week that he might need it. But fortunately, he's met up with a few specialists. They've said that he doesn't and that he can now focus on recovery and will be aiming to return for the Euros. So circa 6 weeks recovery time.
If we put it into context, 6 weeks out is taking you right up to the eve of the tournament. So, and that will be like McColl's first game, potentially, if he features in any of those group stage matches, which is also concerning. Of course, he's a great talent and he's had a brilliant season. Like, after Zabudny, for me, the best Ukrainian player in the Premier League, and one of the best in his position as well, all things considered, especially in, you know, the recent run-in and everything else that sort of Everton have turned it around. Secure for another season, they will be playing in the Premier League. So it's good from that perspective, and more so that, you know, Everton won't be missing him now as well. If he has got to miss the next 6 weeks, it'll just be, you know, rest up and come back for that. But like you say, Adam, if he's not back, or even if he is back and included in the team, but he like can't play until the knockout rounds or like the last group stage game, we've got to think of who else can play there. I think there's a handful of options as to who. First of all, well, the first person that came to my mind was actually Zinchenko to be switched down to left back. Evidently, we know that he plays there for Arsenal. Not been playing or starting recently, which is a shame. I think that Arteta is going for more for defensive stability and solidity over sort of the positive aspects of Zinchenko's game, which comes in, you know, linking up attack and everything going on there. That's a possibility, but for some reason, I think that maybe Rebrov won't go for that because it's a bit too unorthodox for like a backup position. The other option is potentially playing Matvienko left back and starting Talavierov in the middle alongside Zabarny. Is it a possibility? Maybe. No idea. So that's an option. Another option is Bogdan Mikhailichenko, obviously at Polisia. He's been all right. He's not been like unbelievable. Nowhere near sort of the level that he was at when he was at Shakhtar in last campaign. And then there's also the potential for Karavayev to play there. If worst comes to worst, utility player, he can play there. But we know that he's got problems as well in his defensive responsibilities sometimes. So I think that would be quite similar to Zinchenko. Zinchenko, obviously, the better option there anyway. And also Konstantin Vyvcherenko, who's obviously been doing very well for the Ukraine under-21s, have been having a great season with Dynamo. However, the fact that he's not debuted for Ukraine yet is something that, you know, it's just a slight cause that Rebrov might not want to risk too many youngsters, too many inexperienced players. Because I've recently been looking at sort of the squad that Ukraine had in Euro 2021 and the squad that they're likely to have for this Euros, you know, just on a pure guesstimate.
And I'd say there's about 20 players out of the Ukraine 26-man squad that they had at Euro 2020 that will be playing at this one. However, the difference is that a lot of the players that started in 2020 or 2021 are actually moved to the bench. And a lot of the players that were on the bench and in experience are now obviously the starters. That's Sankov, who was coming off the bench all the time in that Euros. Surdakov, of course, is now a key player. Questions over if Stepanenko is going to be fit. Is he going to start or is Brashko going to play instead?
Dovbik,
of course, the main one from that perspective. Mudrik, completely brand new player that wasn't in that team. And we'll have to wait and see. But as we've already seen in the playoff rounds, Rebrov likes to have two players on every position. And I've got a feeling that he counts Zinchenko as a centre mid, so he probably won't be straying from there. So we might either see someone brand new or just have sort of Karavayev as this backup. But whoever's going to be coming in, I think if it's going to be another left back, might not be the starter.
Do you think Sobel's out of the question, given his form in Belgium?
Well, I've had a look at it, and it's not particularly great. He's not been playing too regularly. He's had a few starts at the start of his loan, and then he's just been used as a sub bit part and not played other games. So I'd be surprised if he's even given a call-up, because he probably doesn't deserve it. And Rebrov's been going to UPL games regularly of late, so I feel that he's probably got a closer eye on the domestic scene if he's going to be going for anyone over anyone else.
With Trenko it is. However, over in Spain, mixed bag of news again. Dovbik, of course, top scorer, which will be a great watch over the last few weeks of the season. However, in Madrid, Courtois back in training for Real, which, you know, I think for most neutrals, never mind Ukrainian supporters, watching European football this year, would question whether Courtois deserves his starting spot back, given Lunin's performances, in particular in the UCL over the last few weeks. However, noises are coming out of the Bernabeu that Courtois could be put back in as first-choice keeper, which would be a shame and thoroughly undeserved, given the performances of Lunin. Now for the important part of the show, where the real football takes place. None of the corporate bullshit that gets most of your attention. It's Persia and the Druha, and even more importantly, the amateurs, who have certainly caught their eye when they've decided to turn their back on their roots and head into the professional game over the last few years. Let's start with the more historical and pleasing aspects of the Persia League. Our champions have been announced, Ray, for this year, returning back to the UPL. Who are they?
Well, Adam, I'm not sure that you can be that confident about it, because it's Ukrainian football. You know, the principle is not get up the table. So even though Karpaty secure promotion, they might as well end second, just like Obolon did the last season when they lost the title to Polisia. The title that some teams may be, you know, may not even win ever again in their short-term lives. But hey, Karpaty are back. Inholets are 99% back. For good or for the better or worse, you know. And in Druha Liha, we have the guys. I was particularly interested in the guys who just promoted from amateur leagues last season, because remember, last season we had 10 teams in Druha Liha, with two of them being the second teams of other clubs. I believe that those were Kremlin and Metallurg Zaporizhia. And now that Metallurg Zaporizhia is basically collapsed, being the team funded by city government, the state government. Next year, we are going to expect more second teams from UPL sides. I believe that it's going to be Kolas, Ruch. Well, Ruch was already there. Maybe Worska, I'm not really sure. but some of them are also joining. And the guys who promoted from amateur league last year were Kudryvka, Druzhba, Myrivka, and Skala 1911. They have been really good, particularly Druzhba Myrivka, one of the juggernauts among top three, Yuksa and Zvagel, the farm club of Police Zhytomyr. It's still up for grabs, the title. 52, 54, and 56 points, respectively, with Chaika from Kyiv Oblast having 46 and fourth position. It all might change. Don't really pay attention to numbers. The fact is that there is competition. And my highlight of the season, undoubtedly, would be the participation of Maxim Fishuk, the player coach of Siege Dobryana team from the very lowest level of Stry region in Lviv Oblast, the main character of Nefutbolist YouTube series. I recommend everybody to watch it because that's where the essence of football is back. And that's where they actually play for something and not just to please their president, you know? So this guy has been an expert in UPLTB studios. And this reference, this little connection is something, it's a silver lining that we have for the future of what we actually been discussing here for quite a while now in English. Because, I mean, when we invite the coach of regional, city, or neighborhood team, albeit former footballer, in the national coverage of basically match of the day coverage of Ukrainian football, that means something is still alive out there.
And long may it remain. Long may it remain. Moving into sort of the future with the Persia and the Druha, I think we do have to raise a couple of issues here, right? Have you been happy overall with the organisation of it this year? Because for me, at the start of the year, I raised my concerns. And I think a lot of it has been borne out. The regionalisation in the Persia is a mess because it's supposed to be done to cut back costs, yet you still have teams having to travel across the country in the second half of the year anyway when they go and play these other teams home and away. So they end up playing everybody anyway in the league, given how it sort of panned out. And we've got this sort of weird situation now with the playoffs. I mean, Livy Bereg are looking strong, and Ingolets, Livy Bereg, with the two standout teams in the East. But a lot of the teams in the West were fighting a lot stronger. When you look at the bottom, it's, I think the bottom four teams now are all from the East. And unsurprisingly, it should be added. And there's a lot of questions. I don't like the way it's been done. And the talk is, again, was it 18 teams for next season in the Persha? And how many are we looking at in the Druha? Is it 18 again with the extra reserve teams jumping in and some of the amateur teams moving up into the professional ranks again? The structure just doesn't look right. And whether it's about making the league smaller and maybe going back to the three or the four times in the year, having the two groups play out with one spot from each to go up for, at the end of the season, having this instead of this intertwined mess to find out who gets relegated. I don't know exactly what the answer is. I'm not Andrei Shevchenko, so I'm not paid to come up with the answer. But I am here to raise my concerns. I don't like the way it looks at the moment, and I hope to see it looking better next year, because it seems very unbalanced, the whole lot of it. When it comes to the Druha, again, we've had teams drop out very quickly again this year, and some teams looking incredibly uncompetitive. We'll remember, was it the 11-1 week two of that team that disappeared rather quickly? Now, that's not good for football. It's great for goal differences, but not good for football. And we need to see controls put in place there, where these teams need to look credible, and it needs to look good, because otherwise, like we say, it's the heart and soul of football. But when the occasional viewer takes a look or listens and goes, "Oh, well, I'm going to go and see what's going on," and they say, "Oh, it looks a bit of a farce," and creates that bad impression. And we are, some of us, fighting for the soul of football, and we need things like this put in place right. Otherwise, we're going to see football continue to go the wrong way, and we don't want that. We want stories like yours there with the Football East coming to the fore in conversations. This is what football should be about. And yeah, the administrators need to. We've seen this year administrators take a step forward with the financial auditing going through and the information coming out, which we all expected, but now has been brought to the public domain. Next step is sort out the structure of the football to try and make it more balanced. Here we were earlier tonight saying the relegation battle in the UPL is a lot more exciting than the title fight. And how can anybody bar the top two compete for the top two? Something needs to be done. And Mr. Shevchenko, we'll look into you.
And as we wrap up today's show, don't forget about our sponsor, watchupl.com. If you're in Canada, USA, or the UK, you can watch the majority of UPL games, final home stretch of the season, exclusively on there every single week. Some big fixtures coming up in the future. Use code 20ZL to get 20% off.
Till next time, everyone. Take care. Stay safe. Goodbye for now. Bye-bye.